you know, Brooke, perhaps you can start, but we'll chime in as well. You know, what's it like hearing Bob Dylan singing the songs of the Jimmy Van Heusen catalog when we're kind of used to kind of the Dylan classics for many of us?
Well, the interesting part about Bob Dylan is on his two most recent projects, he has included 10 Jimmy Van Heusen songs. The first one being the Fallen Angels project. He's got two of the songs, All the Way and Polka Dots and Moonbeams. And then the most recent project he came out with, which is one that's really interesting to me, the project is called Triplicate. Bob Dylan sings 30 songs. And out of those 30 songs, 8 of them are Jimmy Van Heusen-composed songs.
Do you know why he picked those tunes?
Well, the overall reason is Sinatra, right? I mean, we could assume that the reason he's attracted to Van Heusen to begin with is because of Sinatra, right?
Yes, the bulk of the songs on Triplicate are all Sinatra songs.
And the first Standards album is entirely Sinatra songs, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, it was The Shadows in the Night was the first.
Shadows in the Night,
yeah.
Right, exactly. They're all Sinatra-centric to a degree. You can clearly see that's his point of inspiration, I think.
Oh, sure. And then once that was established, then the songs in particular, why did he pick September of My Years or I Could Have Told You, with all those kind of tunes. I was just curious as to why those particular tunes.
Yeah, there's 88-plus songs that
88.
Sinatra recorded of Van Heusen.
And now Dylan has done what? 12, 15
of them?
10 of them. Okay, well, there you go.
He's got a way to go.
Yeah.
I hope so.
There's a lot more records coming.
So musically, you know, again, people might have kind of a nostalgic listen for some of the Great American Songbook tunes. What does Dylan bring to him? What's his interpretations like that you would comment about that, you know, are needless to say, Dylan's style is very unique. How does it fit these songs?
My feeling about Dylan's Standards albums is obviously, I think it speaks to the diversity and the integrity of the American songbook that you can have such diverse interpretations of the same material. And that's what I always say in much of my writing is that the American songbook is the only body of work where you can have people as different as Bob Dylan and Frank Sinatra singing the same song, and it can be fundamentally different, yet it's fundamentally the same. And, you know, even if you look at Sinatra's own career within itself, he could take the same song and sometimes do it fast, sometimes do it slow, sometimes take the same song, sometimes make it happy, sometimes make it sad. We're talking the same notes, the same words, you know, the same rhymes, but, you know, in the interpretation it becomes completely different. What I feel about the Dylan records is that, you know, bravo, you know, why not? Here's a new way to do it. Now, do I like it better than Sinatra? Well, of course not, but I don't have to make that comparison. You know, you're allowed to enjoy both. I personally prefer them to the Rod Stewart versions, even though Stewart is a lot more slick, and you might say that he has more of the same values as, you know, the traditional pop singers. But, you know, I like kind of, you know, Dylan goes for all the rough edges, and he's got a very different take on them, a very unique and personal take.
Right, sure. Well, and, you know, everybody, many songs have been interpreted by lots of different artists in different ways. And in fact, they're better if somebody brings something new or different or puts themselves into it. What do you think, Brooke, when you hear these with the rough edges of Dylan and kind of the, you know, it's obviously a personal interpretation as opposed to a slick one with Dylan?
Well, two of my songs that I really enjoy listening to Bob Dylan sing, one being All the Way. I don't know if you've heard his version or not, but it is rough. And it's just, as Will expressed, it's just a different take on it, different interpretation. And the other one would be is September of My Years. I personally have just recently turned 56. I did not get that song at age 46. I didn't get it at 36. But as I have gotten older, as I have aged, September of My Years now speaks to me.
And, now you stop to pause at Wishing Wells, right?
Yes, yes. It's his version of September of My Years, same thing. I get it. It's just it's a great interpretation of it.
And I think, too, when you compare Sinatra and Dylan, they're both very, very rooted in songwriting and song history. Dylan is rooted in blues and jazz and folk music, and he studies this, and he goes very deep into catalogs. And Sinatra, too, truly appreciated songwriters. He was not a writer himself, of course, but he truly appreciated the origin of a song, and I think they both put that into how they look at a song, interpret a song, and pick a song.
One thing that Tony Bennett told me, and this is anybody that has a music publishing company like Brooke or is a songwriter would do well to keep this in mind. Tony said that if anybody wants me to pay attention to a song, the last thing you should do is send me a record of it. I don't want to hear somebody else doing it. If you want me to pay attention to it, send me the music, and I'll get my piano player to play it for me from the music. In other words, he doesn't want to hear that somebody else has already interpreted it in a certain way. Isn't that interesting?
It's kind of, yeah, it is. It makes it pure, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. He wants to start from, you know, the ground zero. He wants to start from, the notes. He doesn't want to start with somebody else's interpretation. He wants to start, with the raw material itself. And I'm sure Sinatra was the same way.
Oh, he put his own spin on it. You don't want to copy it. You want to have your own organic version of it.
And you look at both of their personalities, both Sinatra and Dylan, they both do, have done, whatever the heck they wanted to do.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. You mentioned that you want to hear the Sammy Kahn story about Dylan?
Yeah, you had mentioned something like that, and I just found it kind of interesting.
I interviewed Sammy a number of times in his last few, obviously while he was alive, but in his last few years, and once he had gotten back from the gala dinner at the Songwriters Hall of Fame, if you knew Sammy, he was always being slightly coy and slightly theatrical, and you never knew to the extent that he was kidding, but he would always say something like, I was approached by a fellow by the name of Fred Astaire, or I wrote a song for a fellow by the name of Jackie Gleason. And he always talked like that, as if you've never heard of this person he was talking about. And, So I was starting to interview Sammy, and he said, did you ever hear of a fellow by the name of Bob Dylan? So I said, yes, Sammy, I've heard of Bob Dylan. And Sammy told, I won't do Sammy's voice any further. That's not any. If Tita Khan is listening, Sammy absolutely did not talk like that. So I just want to make that clear. But Sammy says that he sat next to Bob Dylan at the Songwriters Hall of Fame. And Dylan says to Sammy, I have always wanted to record one of your songs. And Sammy, whenever anybody in the rock or rhythm and blues or soul communities mentioned one of his songs, it was inevitably Teach Me Tonight, because that was closely associated with Nat King Cole and with Dinah Washington. And there were a lot of great black interpreters of Teach Me Tonight. So Sammy just said to himself, well, I guess he wants to teach me tonight. And then Dylan says, the song I want to do is All My Tomorrows. And Sammy thought it was amazing that Dylan, who he didn't realize had that great knowledge of the American songbook and his work in particular, would even know All My Tomorrows. It's really not a top of your head standard, like My Funny Valentine or, It Could Happen to You or something like that, or one of the Body and Soul, that would go on anybody's, top 10 list of standards. And Sammy was very impressed by that. Now, for years, I told that as a joke. Can you imagine Bob Dylan doing All My Tomorrows? I don't know that he's done that yet.
But Dylan really never went to shoot for the obvious anyway, so that really isn't surprising
when
you look at his work.
Well, it's not surprising to us now, but to Sammy it was. And when Sammy told me, it was. I don't think I had the same depth of appreciation of Dylan that I did then.
Dylan certainly could play his old music, play whatever he comes up with more contemporarily, and sell out the house. He has enough fans. People will buy his albums. What do you think he's going for when he goes to the Great American Songbook and Jimmy Van Heusen Music? What's the appeal to him, do you think?
Again, I go back to the personalities. He's doing what he wants to do right now in his career. I mean, he's playing the music that he feels that best expresses himself at this moment in time. And he is doing a great job of it.
I think he's playing with this concept of interpretation, where he comes from, interpretation, improvisation, and composition can be very closely interrelated. Dylan has famously started by taking a traditional folk song and turned it into one of his own songs. I mean, you can name a zillion examples of that. The Girl from the North Country or Hard Rain's Gonna Fall being based on an old English folk song called Lord Randall. Some of these arrangements of these songs where he changes them so much that it goes beyond arrangement into composition, you might say.
And he uses his touring band for these arrangements, which is another wrinkle in all of this. And I think these musicians are just equally adept at adapting to all kind of genre of music, different musics. And his leadership of that band is kind of cool when you look at what he inspires them to do and creates this new version of these songs and, based on the whole history of it, but it still puts his own spin on it.
I mean, Dylan has this view of kind of being a recluse or eccentric. The Nobel Prize thing kind of solidified that for many people. How is he seen in the music business?
I would perceive that he is an American icon at this point.
Yeah, and I think, too, reputation-wise, I mean, and I would compare him to Sinatra on this level, too. The work ethic from both of them, Dylan still tours, I think there's 100-something shows a year or something like that at this stage in his career, and he'll be here in Syracuse, of course, on Sunday. But I think it's that work ethic, so I think they're looking at him as this ever-changing working artist who has a work ethic and does not call it in and performs with a top-notch band and is still attracting fans, much like Sinatra did in his later years. He's still selling
tickets.
Does
anybody know to what extent Dylan does these songs in his live concerts?
Yeah, I happen to have caught his show last summer in Canandaigua, New York, and with Mavis Staples. Mavis Staples was the opener. And I would say about 1/3 of his show was the American
really?
Songbook
wow.
stuff. It was quite a bit. And
that's great.
And Brooke, you mentioned All the Way earlier in the conversation. He did pull that one out. And it's funny to hear something like that and then, Blown in the Wind and then Polka Dots and Moonbeams
and
then like a Rolling Stone. It's kind of an odd thing, but that is why you go to see Dylan, because he represents this incredible depth and breadth of the musical landscape. And to put all that Sinatra stuff out there is cool. And he actually fronts his band. He does not play the guitar anymore. So he's out there dancing around a little bit, doing a little shuffle, and he's the band leader. It's an interesting presentation. It really is.
Well, you think he's been going at it for, what, 5 decades now?
Yeah, over that, yeah, now.
Yeah.
So he's got quite a stage presence, and he knows what he's doing up there. And his band is a A-list band, and so it's a real professional show.
Would you say, I mean, either of you, would you say you just need to go see Bob Dylan because it's a piece of history, even if you're not totally in touch with what his latest project is?
I would think so. You know, I've told the story that if there's somebody out there that you want to see, and they're getting up in age, you need to do it. You just never know. I mean, there's been several performers that I wish I had seen. I, unfortunately, never got to see Frank Sinatra perform. You know, it's something I will look back. It's a wish. So now when there's somebody that comes through town, this is off beach, Chicago, Earth, Wind, and Fire came through the area that I was in last year, and I made an extra effort. Same thing. I see Gladys Knight literally a month ago here in Nashville, and I'm making that extra effort these days. So I say that to your listeners, that if somebody is thinking about it, just do it. Just go see that particular person in concert. You won't regret it.
Yeah, and certainly in this genre, if we're talking that, I think Tony Bennett, next time he's in your town, and he's still out there too.
And he's 90. I just saw him a month ago as well.
Yeah, and that's worth seeing. He's still a great showman.
I mean, there is a sort of a history of, you know, Dylan is coming here to Syracuse, obviously. Jimmy Van Heusen was born here as Chet Babcock.
Correct.
And, went to school, et cetera. It's kind of an interesting full circle, isn't it?
It is. It is a very interesting. Here we are. My great uncle was born back in 1913. We're over 100 past years of that. His first songs were in their late 30s, early 40s. These songs are 50, 60, 70 years of age, and here we have Bob Dylan giving his interpretation of these songs, and they're still going strong after all these years. I mean, it is amazing that these songs are still being played and performed as we speak.
Yeah, and I guess we're all hoping that because of different artists doing these kinds of songs in different genres, that it would bode well for the American Songbook, attract new fans, certainly new rock fans for sure, but perhaps even younger fans who see this stuff and hear this stuff and get turned on by it.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, it certainly is. It's yet another path to it.
Yeah. Now, Brooke, I have one quick question for you. It's kind of a trivia thing. As I was looking at all the tunes here on the Dylan stuff, there's a tune called Somewhere Along the Way. And I see on I think it's on the September of My Years album, it's on the Swingin' Affair album, I think, Sinatra record. But the composer is credited as Kurt Adams, along with Sammy Gallup. And Kurt Adams seems to be a pseudonym for Jimmy Van Heusen. What is that all about?
There was a part in his life that he was writing with Johnny Burke. He had an exclusive contract to write with Johnny Burke, and Johnny Burke was having some health issues. So to stick with that contract, he basically wanted to say, hey, I'm writing as Jimmy Van Heusen. On the side, there were some people that wanted him to write some songs, so he created some pseudonyms so that he could go out and outside that contract and write some songs. And there were a couple of them, but somewhere along the way was probably one of the more infamous ones.
But it was pretty common back then. A lot of famous songs. I mean, not Cole Porter or Richard Rodgers, but a lot of songwriters in Tin Pan Alley, because of publishing contracts, wrote under other names. When George David Weiss wrote the lyric to Lullaby of Birdland, he wasn't allowed to put his name on it because of a publishing thing. Most of Louis Jordan's hits were published under his wife's name, Fleecy Moore. When you see Fleecy Moore in a Louis Jordan song, it means Louis Jordan. That was a fairly common thing back then because of the publishing contracts.
Well, thanks for clearing it up, guys.
Well, and thank you both. I really appreciate your time for this project.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, if you talk to Bob, say hello from us.
Yeah, we'll do.
We will.
Thanks, Will. Thanks, Brooke.
Jimmy Van Heusen's great-nephew, Brooke Babcock, Wall Street Journal and Vanity Fair music writer Will Friedwald, and Live Space Entertainment's Tom Honan speaking with WAER's Chris Bolt.